Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on MyNorthWestOutdoor.com, and don't forget about TheOutdoorLine.com with blogs, podcasts, and so very, very much more. Morning, Rob Ensley.
Morning. Nice to be actually in studio with you guys at Nelly's studio.
Well, yeah. Well, it's not just my studio. It's
looking at your pretty faces here.
Look at your ugly face right here.
It's
nice to see the swelling down on your mug today, Joe.
I know. I talked to my Uncle Ray yesterday, and he's like, I said, yeah, you know, I was out last Sunday with Nelly, and we went and did a little pheasant hunting, and I was talking to him, and I said, yeah, the new Browning shot great, the new A5, Wicked Wings, pretty impressed with it. And he goes, well, you can't even see out of your right eye. I was like, yeah, it's went down now. Yeah,
I don't need to.
I shoot cross-eyed anyway.
Last time I saw you, you look like you got drugged through a knot hole sideways.
Yeah.
Glad to see your back.
Some of my buddies asked if I ran into Mike Tyson on the trail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look pretty beat up.
Oh boy! Classic. Well, yeah, glad we. Of course, we told that story last week on air. Welcome to October, man. It's here. This is the month where I have found out how out of shape I got during fishing season. Okay, and now it's hunting season when you got to kind of get out there and move around a little bit. And I'm telling you what, October is
it's probably the single greatest month of the whole calendar here in Washington, though. There is a ton of stuff to do.
Oh, man, there is, yeah.
And not to mention all the clam digs coming up. There's a bunch of clam digs middle of the month, end of the month. Everything. It's all happening right now. The only thing we don't have is blackmouth. Can we get through that? Are we going to survive that, Nelly?
We're going to have to.
Your hands are shaking.
Oh, it's going to be fine. You know, hey, look.
It's going to be fine.
You got Area 10 until middle of November.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, you know, come on, go have Thanksgiving, go have Christmas, and then we'll deal with it after the first of the year. We'll figure it out. But I tell you what, dude, the ducks and geese are going to take it in their shorts.
They are.
You know, hopefully.
The ducks and geese are going to be like, please bring back blackmouth.
We got blackmouth, yeah.
And, damn straight.
Hopefully there could be an antlered muley buck and an elk in there.
Oh, well, Rob and I'll be fine well on into December because we got mule deer and three mule deer hunts, and then I have a late cow archery tag. We can go out and try to get some elk.
Yeah.
Since you know, I botched our one shot here in Washington.
Well, I don't think we missed a whole lot.
No.
Most of our friends that were out there, the elk have been silent.
Yeah.
It's been a really tough go here. In fact, it might be better for the muzzleloaders, which opens today, by the way. They might have better luck. The elk might be talking again. They sure were silent down in Southwest Washington. We were down there crawling around. There was just nothing going on. A lot of guys said that big east wind that came through.
Just changed
everything, all the smoke and everything. I guess there was a huge blow down there, blowing trees down just at like a 40, 50 mile an hour blow that went for a day and kind of blew all the elk out of a lot of those areas. So who knows what it was, but hopefully for the muzzleloaders it works out better. They go in the woods today through the night, and those elk could be screaming here, so it could be a good time.
Well, and you know, we had this weather disturbance that moved through, and all the coho fishermen, they were wondering, oh man,
we were talking about last weekend.
All this rain's going to suck all the coho up the creek, and then we're going to hold on here now. I mean, there's a bunch of before the San Juans closed, the west side was full of them, the straits were full of them, and that's sure what it sounded like, because this whole week, when that weather turned earlier in the week, like Sunday, Monday, whenever it was, they've been just hammering the coho out on the 9-10 line.
And they're actually getting some down in South Sound. Now, last week it was terrible down at Point Defiance, and now, I mean, there's some activity down there.
Yeah.
They're catching some fish down the south end, so kind of strung out right down through the Sound. But the reports you guys had from the 9-10 line, the Marine Area 9, Marine Area 10 line.
Yeah, just kind of out in the middle out there, the shipping deep water. Mm-hmm. And, lots of fish, man. My buddy Chris Sherwood was out there, and they've been fishing it pretty regular. They hammer it this time of year right on through when it closes. And, you know, they're running, that same blinky green blinky flasher we've been running.
Hate those things.
Yep. And the white squid, but they're running a longer leader, 36 inches, and putting pretty much a whole herring fillet on that squid, which looks a little weird, but I've done that in the past. You know, a big, it pretty much just takes up the whole thing, but you got this big old piece of bait back there. And yeah, they've been whacking them.
My favorite whole deal. I didn't do that much coho fishing this year, but we, Shane Palko and I did a donation trip with Joe Tafoya, which was one of Tobek's roommates out there. And I did one of the herring fillet deals in a typical strip deal like you normally do. And then just put it out on an 8-ounce sinker way back behind the boat, 30 feet, and forgot about it. Dude, a coho grabbed that thing and pinned that thing in the rod holder. Joe DeBoy could not get it out of the rod holder, dude. It was like, man, come on, did you quit lifting weights?
You didn't make fun of him, did
no.
you?
No. Oh, man, he got it bad. Yeah, he got it really bad.
Doesn't seem like the kind of guy to, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, great, good dude. That's definitely good dude. So now here we are in October. Okay, everybody, you know, there's a whole bunch of guys out there looking forward to waterfowl. That opens up here in a couple weeks. And, of course, the general deer opener is 2 weeks from today. And WDFW came out this week with some indications that, man, guys may want to think about going to the Okanagan this year. Jason Brooks and his son got a couple of nice bucks in the muzzleloader.
I saw
over.
That.
Dude.
That's good. He's tagged out. I don't have to deal with him.
Yeah.
Like, he's out of the woods. Good. Get him out of the woods on the sidelines.
Only get one deer tag a year, you know. But here we go. Okanagan, $22 per doze. Okay.
Yeah, so here's the deal. There's no surveys this year. There hasn't been a waterfowl survey. There hasn't been any big game surveys. They can't really get in a plane with another guy. You know, it's been a mess. But they had enough information from last year to determine that we're kind of on the upswing here a little bit. Chelan and Okanagan County, the habitat's been good. We haven't had a mega fire for a while now. We did have some pretty good fires over there late in the summer, but those weren't up in the alpine, up in the migration route. They were down low. Burned up some of the local habitat over there in the eastern part of Okanagan County. But really, habitat's been pretty good since the last big round of wildfires, and the winter's been good. Things are ticking up here.
And the guys who went in for muzzleloader actually had some weather.
They did.
Some significant weather, some snow up in the high country, which, you know, it's pretty cool to have that this early. Kind of gets those deer, switches them, right? Gets them kind of going into that pattern that we want them to be in when we go into the woods with our rifles.
Pushing down the ridges.
Yeah. I mean, it's been nice for the last
But we don't want people to go hunting.
No, we don't.
No, don't go. I mean, I wouldn't go over there. I wouldn't do anything if I were you. There's some honeydews around the house.
Well,
we definitely don't want you in the woods.
Well, I tell you what, one of the things that it's just not fall until that dog in front of you gets all fired up and that tail starts wagging and a pheasant gets put up, all right? I had a wardrobe malfunction for the pheasant opener. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we do have to run down.
We got
to
run down.
We got to run down the show.
We don't want to talk about your wardrobe.
Okay. All right. We'll get to the wardrobe.
Listen, we got something going on in the oceans.
Yeah, we do.
Worldwide, it's not good, and it's the plastics problem in our oceans. And we got John O'Keefe jumping on from Yamaha Outboards to talk about the Right Water campaign. The Yamaha and a few other companies have got together and they're developed some technologies to pull some plastics out of some of the bays on the East Coast. They're raising money. This is a bad deal, folks. These plastic bags, all these single-use water bottles that we use, plastic straws, we kind of joke about it. Oh, why do I have to use this paper straw?
Well,
you know what? 175 million straws a day in the U.S. alone.
You know, I was kind of jumping on the city of Seattle. I mean, for, you know, all the stuff they let go on, but they're banning straws and they're banning plastic bags. And now, you know, you kind of see the plastic bag deal. Because
it's a bad
deal. Well, right now, it's estimated that there's a third of a pound of plastic for every pound of fish in the ocean.
Yeah.
And at the current rate of deposition right now, we're looking at, by the year 2050, we're looking at a 1-to-1 ratio. Okay, and so I mean, we got to do something. That's the curve. That's the curve I want to see flattened right there.
So just here in about 10, 15 minutes, John O'Keefe's going to jump on talk about the Right Water campaign and what they're doing, and throw some more data out there for folks, because a lot of people, it's like it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, whatever, it doesn't affect me. It actually does.
Or they think, hey, I don't throw plastic into the water.
You do.
Do you have a case of bottled water on your boat?
Yeah.
Do you use plastic garbage bags? And I'm the worst offender of anybody else, because I mean I should be on the Ziploc Pro staff because of all the Ziploc bags.
You also run through about 15 bottles of water a day on the boat.
So absolutely. Yeah.
You may be the problem.
Yeah. I'm a problem.
Let's save some of that for when John jumps on here in a minute. Then 7 o'clock, LPJ, Leopold Johnson, a good buddy, guides on the coast. He's kind of gone full fly fishing on these kings and cohos on the coast. He's got a killer program set up. I talked to him a couple days ago. He got me all fired up to catch big chrome coastal fall kings on a swung fly.
So
he's the only guy doing it.
So it's awesome. Used the term swing yesterday. I was talking to him on the phone, and he took umbrage to that term. Says, listen, no, we're not steelheading for these things. He says, think of a plug. Think of plug water. And then he said, listen, hang up. And he called me on the, what do you call that, video call on your FaceTime deal on the phone. Anyway, so he called me and showed me one of his flies in comparison to a plug. He says, listen, this is the mindset. I go, you can't catch a king on a fly rod. And he goes, oh, yes, you can.
Oh, yeah. They're chucking some heavy-duty stuff. So we're going to have him at 7 o'clock talk about his program. And then our good friend Lee Jost, Boss Shot Shells.
The red death pills.
Yeah, the little red death pills. Oh, my gosh. We're going to have him on 725 here. He's one of the top waterfowl photographers in the country, if not the world.
Just the stud. Yeah.
The guy kills it. He's in high demand. He's going to peel a little bit of time here, a little bit of 725 for us, to 15 minutes on the show here to tell us what he's got going on, what Boss has going on. We've been using it for the last couple of years and just murdering ducks. So, yeah, the Boss man himself is going to jump on 725. Lee Jost, tell us what's going on.
Nelly and I used them last week.
Dude. And
and they work on pheasant, too, surprisingly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and they did work on pheasant. But something else that I was using for pheasant didn't quite work.
Your shotgun?
No, the shotgun worked. The shotgun worked, but I had a little bit of a wardrobe malfunction. What am I talking about? Give us 90 seconds. We're going to tell you another side of this break right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
From the shining shores of Puget Sound to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. We finally got us all in one location here in the remote Tulalip Roy Robinson Chevy Subaru RV Studios here. Thanks for tuning into the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN. That's Rob Ensley, Joey Piber, and Matt Nelson back in our Seattle studios. I'm Tom Nelson. Thanks for tuning in. So, you kind of first day out hunting, you kind of got to grab some stuff. And I think, yeah, man, it's just a wet day. I'm going to grab some rain pants. I'm going to preface this by saying that, Joey, you know, you've been keeping your rain gear on a boat. Why wouldn't you? And stuff like that.
I keep a set of clothes on the boat.
Right. And so I'm heading out the door. And, there's my black Grundons. I'm just going to grab those. And I freaking...
So you're a triple XL.
I'm a triple. Well, yeah, I'm a triple
and Joey's
XL.
A large.
Large. Yeah. Joey's a large.
So you see where we're going here.
Yeah.
Nelly showed up. He looked like he had on, like when the
pants.
Rock stars Dude. Wear like the tight leather black pants.
This looks like David Lee Roth.
This was bad. This was really, really bad. All right. So you got it, and you got a pair of jeans underneath these things. I ain't going to say nothing. I'm just going to friggin' hunt with them, whatever. And I did. I mean, they were so tight. I go, Joey, I'm not sure. I'm going to check, but these must be your rain pants.
Oh, I knew right away when I saw them. I'm like, those aren't yours.
So we managed to get through the hunt, and I mean, it's tight, but the worst part of it was they didn't breathe a bit. And Joey took me on this hike lap in this freaking area. And I mean, dude, those things were not exactly breathing. By the time we got that whole lap, I might as well have went swimming. I was
when we first started doing the outdoor
soaked,
line. This is probably 2 years in. It's Tom and I and Rob Tobeck, and Tom is in a hurry one morning. He gets in the dryer. It was real warm. It was a spring day. It was pretty hot out actually. And Tom just ripped some shorts out of there. Well, he and Matt were wearing the same short. They had the same shorts.
Yeah,
right?
Just different Matt's sizes.
One, yeah, he's a double, triple XL. Matt's a look, whatever it was, large. And this is close to 10 years ago. So he comes bopping into the studio. Doesn't even know. He's wearing Lululemon shorts, and Tobek just dressed him down. It was like the greatest day of my life. Like, what are you wearing, dude? Yeah,
I kind of didn't realize it was because I was wearing boxers under him. The boxers kind of stuck. Nelly, what are you wearing? What are you? Yeah.
Anyway, I had to be there, but
it was good though. So,
Nelly, we talked about this elk hunting.
Listen, why do you wear jeans? Wear some get some fleece pants or
get some Lululemon.
Some tight,
get
some Sitka tights or something that are comfortable.
Really? Anything goes.
Dude,
you
want to
hike around in jeans?
I actually went into a store looking for some pants to hunt in. I mean, all the outdoor stores right now are so torn down. I can't even believe it.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
It ain't just an ammo shortage, dude.
Yeah.
It's a britches shortage.
Yeah.
I couldn't find hunting britches.
with this COVID thing going on, people are staying close to home. I was just talking to Lee Jost about this yesterday. It's just people are getting back to the roots. They're going fishing, they're going hunting, they're going boating, they're going hiking, bicycling, you know, all the stuff they can do close to home. And the stores are just getting mowed down.
Yeah.
And the manufacturers can't keep up. Half the stuff comes from China.
Yeah.
You know, that there alone, you can't even get half of it. Then their domestic production here is slowed down. Somebody gets COVID and the whole factory gets shut down.
Well, and the thing with production is you forecast, like even a small business like mine, you forecast for what you're going to sell for the year, right? I can't afford to buy 100,000 pounds or 100,000 pounds of something if I think I'm only going to sell 20. So, and then you have something like this come along.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to forecast. Holy cow. We sold everything by July. It's gone. Like there's things that are just gone, and that's everybody. You can't ramp it up if you don't have the raw product.
Yeah, unfortunately, toilet paper sales are in the dumper because everybody stocked up first part of the year. So those poor guys, you know. Yeah.
Ammunition sales are not in the dumper. Man, we had Jason Hordy on last weekend. I tell you what, I went, I bought some ammo down Sport Co. the other day. On the way up here, I acted a little bit of time, so I called Kevin John up at Holiday. I'm like, dude, you got 9mm, 30-30, ran down the list, and they put a whole big box together for me. I raced up there and filled up the trunk of the car, and off I went.
Perfect.
So, nice. That place was mowed down, too.
Yeah.
And it was it was packed up there. Yeah, a lot of people in the store, all standing 6 to 8 feet apart. But
that's cool.
Yeah, they're busy.
That's definitely cool. But the whole pheasant deal, that's so much fun. I mean, if you've never, you know, you don't know, but your dog absolutely lives to go pheasant hunting. And I mean, the dog may not even know it yet, but I mean, they get out there and they know what's going on because they've done it before. But just the fact that they're working up the scents and just watching them work and that kind of stuff, it's just, it's a kick in the pants.
And Bailey hadn't been out since last year, probably around this time.
Yeah.
And man, she did really good. She gets on that track. Well, look, obviously everybody's working out the bugs the first couple times. That's what the reserve's
for. There
was
a little bit of far flushing going on, too.
But she did really well.
But
and
your
she
dog,
got a water retrieve, which was cool.
Which was really cool. Yeah, I was proud of her.
And if guys don't know, look, it's $84.50 for a pheasant, West Side pheasant.
Yep. Odd or even, whatever.
And look, for $84.50, you can go out there and shoot two pheasant a day every day, all season.
It's a pretty good deal.
It's a great deal.
It is a good deal.
Yeah.
It is a good deal.
And you guys got a bunch of birds up the other day.
We did.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Just a kick in the pants. But it's also, you know, it's a great warm-up because so many guys just live for waterfowl hunting, too. You know, I mean, I could go run down the list. All our friends just, you know, can't wait for the next 2 weeks to get by and get going on waterfowl. And it sounds like we got a, you know, pretty good flight going on. But I'm kind of thinking that, you know, waterfowl is not as popular. Water duck hunting isn't as popular as it once was. But I think we're going to see a resurgence in that, too. You know, and guys getting out and doing that program. And as soon as the weather turns, I mean, again, you know, we're going to be kind of limited with regard to saltwater fishing opportunity. But, you know, hey, there's something else going on the bayfront of Puget Sound, and that's waterfowl hunting. And it's a kick in the pants, man. It's fun.
And again, don't go waterfowl hunting. Stay home.
Yeah.
Leave the ducks
alone.
Leave
people home.
Yeah.
It's like getting kids into fishing and hunting. I don't want kids into fishing and hunting. I want the place to myself, you know?
So, you know, and another thing, too, is you know, if you're going to do something like this, if you're going to go pheasant hunting, you're going to go waterfowl hunting, practice. You know, get yourself some clay pigeons, get a box of shells, and get out there and enjoy yourself. And one of the things that we've been messing around with, and I got a couple of them set up on the deck here right now, are these Gymshocky shooting sticks. Okay, it's a Primo
deal. I've been
deal.
Using them for a long time.
You have been.
Yep.
And you turned me on
and
to
I
them.
Got into that shooting blacktails here on the west side.
Gotcha.
You got a couple seconds to make an offhand shot. And I shot a humongous blacktail twice in the pouring down rain and never found him.
Hmm.
And I was just devastated. I said, from now on, I'm running these shooting sticks. And the cool thing about them, you pull that trigger and they drop right to the height you need them at. And in Montana and some other places, I've preset the legs and I've carried them actually with the legs extended, set up so that I just throw the gun on there standing and shoot. And I popped a couple big bucks back in Montana.
And they're not heavy. So
they're not bad.
It's, you know.
No, and it's almost a walking stick. They say don't use them as a walking stick. But still, they're light. If you practice with them a little bit, but it's just like, just think of a tripod that you're packing around holding. And you're right. You want to kind of pack them with a little bit extended. And then you just pull a trigger and it opens up and bam, you got a steady shooting platform. The new Gen 3s you can shoot from a sit. You can also, they've got kind of convertible little top. You can use them as a tripod holder.
They've got single legs. They've got bipods. They got tripods. The one that we like to use that I've been using for a while is the tripod.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just rock solid.
Well, and then you can also put your spotting scope on it. And so I spent some time down in Arizona, and you're hunting these little coos deer, and you glass all day long. All day, all you do is glass. So sometimes it's nice to not be sitting. And with those, like, I can just stand up and spot out of them. You can put your binos on them, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're slick. Well, we're going to utilize those bad boys in Montana.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, yeah. And so the Gen 3s are great. They're not that expensive. There's a Primo, Jim Shockey.
Primos.
Yeah.
Trigger stick.
Trigger stick. That's the name of it. Yeah. Yep. But check those out. But practice with them, too. Mm-hmm. You know, you owe it to yourself to take those things to the rifle range with you. After your gun's sighted in, just take a couple shots, and you will be amazed how offhand, how much steady you are. It's like, you know, when you're a kid, you're taught – you're taught prone, you're taught to kneel, and you're taught to sit, right, along with standing up. Mm-hmm. Well, this is actually almost like a fifth shooting position, right?
Yeah, I think it's important to have, especially with – we're shooting a lot further nowadays.
Right.
And even in Alaska, we had a weight limit what we could bring in. And I couldn't bring these things with me, so I brought these cheapo, like accordion folding sticks. They were perfect. I pulled them out, got set up. I put one elbow on my knee, set on those sticks, 415 yards. You know, hammered that caribou.
In a pretty serious
30-mile-an-hour
wind.
Yeah.
Really?
And it
worked
great.
That's a shot, man.
In a 30-mile-an-hour wind.
Easy. 30, steady 30 with gusts, like, blow you over.
So you had to dope that wind out.
Absolutely. So I studied. I always tape all my ballistics to the stock of my gun. And Doug had all his stuff, too. And I said, we need to study this stuff before this herd comes up here. So I had mental notes on everything before that bull stepped out. So I knew my wind drift. I knew everything in my head. I knew, okay, 300, 400, 500 yards.
And you
instantly knew. I have time to dial. I knew there wasn't going to be time to dial anything. I'm not going to be dialing.
So we're using the hash marks on the.
No, I was just holding over.
Just holding over.
Yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
Holding over. And then I knew, I studied the size of a caribou before I went up there. So I knew how deep they were, how long they were, everything. And like a deer, 18 inches, maybe 20 inches, you know, of body mass. So you can kind of do the math in your head real quick, make some adjustments.
How deep is a caribou?
About 22 inches.
22 inches.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Somewhere in there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
very
not,
cool.
You know, a big, big deer. Not a cow elk and bloated. Like a balloon.
Yeah.
Ballooned up.
You'd be bloated, too, if you had to eat on the tundra for a living,
man.
I tell you what, they must have
gas. Well,
they got
to eat a lot because they walk all day long. They never stop walking.
Yeah.
They never stop.
And
like, just slow down for crying out loud.
And they walk fast.
Yeah.
They do.
Like
deceiving.
You did a nice job on that DIY European mount, too, on that caribou.
Oh, there were some hitches in the giddy up there. Joe helped me with that a little bit, but we got it done. It turned out really good.
Right. Well, cool. Well, one of the things that's not turning out real good is society's use of plastics and where these plastics are ending up. Really, really proud of Yamaha. They're on the forefront of this. The government relations director for Yamaha, John O'Keefe, joining us next, talk about Yamaha's groundbreaking Right Waters program right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the BOMAC Tech Line. BOMAC has all the gear for all your techniques, and SMI shellfish gear is simply the best. BOMAC, we catch big fish.
Welcome to the Tech Line, presented by BOMAC, and it cracked me up, Joey. I got to show Robbo that new crustacean coiler for the first time. He hadn't seen it. That thing is just
slick, right?
Oh yeah, really slick.
It's a game changer with regard to keeping all your crab lines, shrimp lines organized and using the same lines for all your pots. It's just, man, it's you're going to be seeing a lot more of that. Something we need to see a lot less of is plastics. And you shocked me, Robbo, when you said next year I'm not sending water bottles up. I'm not, man. Yeah,
I ship 25 cases every summer to Alaska. And we were even gonna nixay it, put the ixnay on the whole thing this summer. We just put a big water jug on the boat, like a pumper, and some cups. You want some water? Go pump some water. You know, we don't need to be throwing these bottles away every day. And they only drink half the bottle anyway.
Yeah, I know. And then throw the doggone thing away. So really, I wasn't really aware of the depth of this problem until I started talking to John O'Keefe of Yamaha. John is a government relations director for Yamaha Outboards, and John O'Keefe joining us now. Good morning, John. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Hey, morning, John.
Thanks for jumping in with us. And I'm just going to let you run down some of the stats that we talked about earlier this week, John, when we talked about this problem. The ever-increasing issue of plastics in our oceans is shocking. So tell us where we're at now and where we're heading with regard to this issue, John.
Well, before I begin, I'd like to express our hearts go out to those that have been affected by the wildfires in Washington and out west, and also say a heartfelt thank you to the brave men and women that are fighting these fires. They truly are the embodiment of the word heroes. So our thoughts are with y'all, and hopefully this gets under control sometime soon.
Yeah, it's pretty much game over since the last rain we had, John. But, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, my friend. I absolutely could not agree with you more. So right now you have some data that expresses the amount of plastics in the ocean with the biomass of fish in our oceans. And some of these numbers are absolutely shocking.
Yes. So every year it is estimated that there are 8 million metric tons of plastics that enter our oceans. And at currently, we are looking at approximately 1 pound of plastic for every 3 pounds of fish.
That's just out of control. That's amazing.
And if we do not get this under control immediately, by 2050, it is estimated that that will be 1 pound of plastic per 1 pound of fish, which I think we can all agree the oceans will be dead long before it gets to a 1-to-1 ratio.
So a lot of this plastic that we're seeing, you mentioned to me a couple different functions that send it, you know, down in the water. Well, just like I said, I mean, you mentioned our wildfires and you mentioned, you know, and I came back at you and mentioned the rain. That's a good thing and a bad thing, because our first rains after a while provoke something called the first flush phenomena, where plastics down stored storm drains and everything from parking lots and everything else. And it's not just, you know, large plastic bags or water bottles, but it's the microplastics that are a major issue as well.
You're absolutely correct. You know, the phenomenon is basically you see plastics in your Walmart parking lot. You know, that first big rain of the summer is going to wash everything into the storm drains. And from there, it's just a matter of time before what you saw in the parking lot could be floating in the bay in the sound, and makes its way out to the ocean. It's not difficult to follow the path. It's staggering.
It is staggering. Some of the numbers that I've been clued into: 175 million straws per day in the U.S. that all end up in the environment. And what happens with these large plastics? They end up in the storm drain, they end up in the creek, they end up wherever they end up, and then they end up in the water and they get ground down.
Yep.
And you mentioned the word microplastics. As these things get ground down into just to the molecular level almost, they get ingested.
Yep.
By plankton, everything in the ocean ingests
right up
them,
the food chain.
And they go right up the food chain, and there's carcinogens in that stuff.
Yeah.
This stuff's made, it's made out of petroleum. And it affects the reproductive rates. They've already done studies, you know, in Chesapeake Bay, 50% reduction in reproductive rate in the oysters there in the bay with these microplastics. And
because
they're filter feeders and they fill up with plastics.
Yeah.
And it's a bad deal. And John, you could probably shed some more light on some of the numbers. I know you've got all the data over there. You work on this stuff all the time. But share some of the other data that you have. That might convince some folks out here in our neck of the woods to get on board with this stuff.
And what can just the average guy do to combat this?
Well, you know, it's funny that you brought up the Chesapeake Bay. I actually grew up in Virginia on the Potomac River, which empties into the Chesapeake. And they went into a very large campaign in the 90s that was called Save the Bay. And they literally would put placards above storm drains to remind people that this water, what goes through this storm drain, is going to empty into the Chesapeake Bay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've ever been around Washington, D.C., there are areas of the Potomac River that no one would ever get into because they were so polluted. Well, through the efforts of Potomac River Keepers and other organizations, the Potomac has gotten so clean that in the southern Potomac, they have over 1,000 dolphins that call the Potomac home.
No kidding. That's interesting.
And it's amazing. And so, you know, you ask what people can do, every little bit helps. If you see something that's laying on the ground, pick it up. You know, when you go out on the boat, make sure that you've got something that is tied down, that whether it be fishing line or bottles or what have you, something that's got a top on it so that the plastics won't fly out. If you see something on the water, pick it up.
We're talking with John O'Keefe, the Senior Specialist of Government Relations for Yamaha. And John, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's an awareness thing. I mean, before you and I started talking about this and Yamaha's Right Waters project to combat this, I really, you know, it definitely wasn't something that was top of mind. And I mean, you know, we all like to take pot shots at Seattle these days for the knucklehead stuff that's going on in here. And the city of Seattle has basically banned single-use straws and plastic bags. And now I got to kind of eat a little crow here. I kind of understand where they're coming from with this. But tell us about some of the projects that you guys have got behind. I mean, you made me aware of Mr. Trash Wheel in Baltimore Harbor that's catching a lot of this stuff. And Yamaha's building a trash interceptor collection device to fit into storm drains and stuff. So what else is Yamaha doing to combat this plastics in our marine environment situation, John?
Well, I'll touch briefly on some of our partners. We have been looking for community partners that do cleanups, that promote healthy waters, et cetera. And, you know, going back to what can we do? The problem's so large, you know, people tend to shy away from, well, I really can't make a difference. Well, one of the groups that we work with is the Keep Tennessee River Beautiful. And if I told you, if you saw pictures of the Tennessee River, you would think it's one of the most beautiful rivers you've ever seen. Sadly, under the water, it's also one of the most polluted rivers in the world. And it's because of plastic. But because of groups like Keep Tennessee River Beautiful, just this year alone, during the pandemic, so we've had social distancing, they've had to reduce the number of people in the boat, they have collected almost 28,000 pounds of trash to date.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah,
two days of work. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've got a local group around here, River Junkies. We've had these guys on the radio before.
Yeah, there's a bunch of groups around here that do it. And so it basically, look, if it's ending up on the bank of the river or in the bay, we've already failed. We need to keep it from getting to that point. Look, plastic's not going to go away. We just got to be smarter about making sure it doesn't end up in our waterways and end up out there. You see it floating around in the water out there all the time.
But even your behavior at home, Ziploc bags, water bottles, plastic bags at the grocery store.
Yep.
We don't want it in the landfill either. We got to just cut our addiction to this stuff.
Look at a typical fishing trip. Okay, I'm zipping open a package of bait and there's plastic right there. I'm drinking out of a water bottle. I'm opening up a flasher bag and getting a new piece of tackle up. Everything, you know, I'm adding oil to you know, or checking the oil in my outboard. I'm changing the oil, whatever. You know, there's a lot of single use plastic that we really have to, you know, keep an eye on. And a lot of this, some of the plastics we use, John, are recyclable and some of them aren't. But yeah, I agree. Robbo, you hit the nail on the head. It starts with each and every one of us. And I know that, John, you and I had kind of talked about Yamaha's involvement in some local projects here on the West Coast as well, and that's coming down the pike. But, man, I cannot thank you enough for bringing this to our attention and spending some time with us today to talk about plastics in our marine environment, John.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm sorry that we couldn't be in studio together. I miss hanging out with y'all, and what? Hopefully next year we'll be able to make another trip out to Seattle and spend some time together.
We'll get you guys back on the boat and catch some salmon.
Yeah, let's do it, John. Let's do it. John, thank you very much.
Real quick, John, is there a website people can jump on real quick and get some info on this stuff?
Okay, so if you go to the Yamaha Outboards website, there is a link that says sustainability.
Okay.
That's kind of the homepage for Right Waters. It's still a growing campaign. We're about a year and a half old. And so there's plenty more coming down the pike. It's just, that's the initial step. Or if they want to reach out to me personally, my email address is John_O'Keefe, and that's OKEEFE at yamaha-motor.com. And I would be happy to answer any questions that they might have.
Awesome.
He's the Yamaha Senior Specialist for Government Relations, John O'Keefe. John, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your attention to this vital issue. I mean, it's something that you're going to be hearing a lot more of here on the Outdoor Line, too. No question about it. John, thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Tom, thank you.
All right, man. Take care. Thanks again. All right, coming up next, Raymarine Picks of the Week here for the first weekend in October right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the Outdoor Line Picks of the Week, presented by Raymarine Electronics. Don't just go fishing, go hunting underwater. Raymarine, simply superior.
Check out raymarine.com, and you will find the latest, which is the Axiom Plus. That's going to be plugged into a bait table coming close to you, Joey Pyburn, really soon. All right, we got Robbo. Go ahead.
Muzzleloader elk opens today. Folks are hitting the woods today. Runs today through the 9th. Today's a youth duck hunt on the east side. Release sites have been cranking. They started up last weekend. You guys have already been out enjoying some of the great pheasant hunting.
We already ate one.
And they eat good,
they
man.
Do eat good.
Yeah, they're just a chip.
I'm going to make pheasant sausage again. I'm piling it up.
Nice. Oh, there we go.
On the saltwater front, we talked about this earlier in the show. We kind of had a feeling the thing would just dry up with that big rain last weekend, and it usually does. It just sucked a bunch of more fish into the Sound, and it's been, like, pretty dang good.
Oh, yeah.
Sound.
If I cared about fishing at this point, I would definitely go Joey, fishing.
Joey flips, dude. I mean, after Labor Day, he does not care about fishing.
You think he flips? Yeah. Yeah, so, but it was good. The 9-10 awesome. Line, the marine area 9-10 line was really good. Yeah. I've heard of some fish coming off Point Defiance earlier in the week. So we have some silver opportunity. There isn't any blackmail stuff going on for the most part, but there's some silver opportunity down the Sound, and it's actually worth going after them right now. So that's going on right now. The river stuff is happening. That rain last weekend pulled a bunch of fish in, at least for the most part. Now, we kind of thought the Cascade would just keep going. When it came up, all the fish went into the hatchery, and there was no fish behind them, and it sounded like it was pretty slow up there last weekend after the big rain. But
they could still, you know, they could get another
they're
push.
They're in the river. They'll get another push. They're in the river. But Nooksack's Gadget, the Lower Stilly, the Hump, any of the coastal rivers. If you got a favorite river out there right now, it's not too very often that we get a huge shot of rain like that at the end of September. Prime time, man, to go get some kings, cohos. If one of your favorite rivers out there has at least a season anyway, head out and do that. What else you got there, Joe? We're getting ready to do some mule deer hunting here pretty quick. We got the opener.
T-minus 2 weeks, dude.
October 17th.
Yep. So that's coming up.
And if you look at the timing of this year's hunt, I mean, this is kind of the latest in the cycle that it goes. I mean, and that's big, because if we get some weather between now and then, we got a chance, you know, some of these migratory mule deer may get shoved off the high country.
We get five extra days
this year.
There we go.
Well,
yeah. Look, it's huge, because I hunt this hunt every year in the high country, and you just get the beginning of that rut, right? Man, another 5 days could be
game changer.
And the opener's a little bit later, too. Usually it's like the 11th, 12th.
Yeah.
I remember 1 year where there was 80 degrees over there. It's like, oh, my God. But this year, it's pretty good. The 17th, it's like, it's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
I'll take it. It's pretty disheartening when you get on top of a ridge and you're kicking grasshoppers up ahead of you. I mean, it's just, you know.
Last year, I almost got bit by a rattlesnake coming out of there.
Remember that. You're kind of a magnet for that
you
stuff.
You are, man.
Bees, snakes, scorpions, spiders, whatever.
Yeah, he's just getting.
My wife told me I need to up my life insurance because she's pretty sure I'm going to be dead in a year or
two. Don't make her the single beneficiary.
Yeah, right.
text me later and I'll tell you why.
So one of the techniques on the upper part of these rivers is fishing eggs. Joe, what'd you cure, 20,000 pounds of eggs this year? Or was it a slow year?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 15? No, right around that 18,000 to 20,000 pounds.
So what are some of the tricks for folks? Because I tell you what, float fishing eggs or drift fishing eggs is a surefire way to hammer kings and cohos in the river right now. Now, Leopold Johnson, who's coming on after the break, is gonna slap me because all he does is fly fish for him. But talk about
curing. Most of the guys out there right now, you're catching fish. If you're catching fish, taking the eggs out of them, and you're going to fish those eggs like within a week or two, sugar.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to cure fast. The fish love those sugary eggs. Sugar and salt. You don't have to add any chemical. You can do a pretty simple cure. And for these coho, they love it that way.
Red? You always go with red?
Red, yeah. I like red, bright red.
Yeah,
always.
Mm-hmm.
We've dabbled around with some other colors, but it's just like red.
I know, dude.
You know?
It's
for whatever reason, steelhead, kings, coho, bright red.
Yeah.
They love them. But if you're going to cure those eggs and hold them, which a lot of guys like to do for their upcoming winter steelhead, I'd go with a little heavier salt than the sugar. And then cure them, roll them in borax, take a Ziploc bag.
Here we go.
No,
Don't
freeze them.
And a bottle of water and throw them in the river.
Yeah. Perfect. And freeze them, and then you got beautiful eggs put up. And then, but if it was me, I would just take those eggs out. I would throw them in the river. And then buy my eggs.
There we go.
From Riz Bates.
That's so brutal. Leopold Johnson on the coast. We got Lee Jost, Bot Shot Shells, a whole lot more coming up with the hour two on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.